And here we go. Welcome in to another edition of Bucky and BK. Today is Friday, May 8th, 2026. And we've got a lot to dive into on today's program. Some Longhorn football conversation, including very interesting question about the Texas offense in 2026. Evan Veith from Inside Texas will join the show. We'll preview the UT versus UT baseball series coming up in Knoxville this weekend. We've got some NBA postseason conversation to talk about. The Bucks gold star locks for the weekend. The NCAA tournament has officially expanded. And the latest on the Mike Vrabel, Diana Russini situation, the gift that keeps on giving. So much to talk about on a Friday show. We appreciate y'all spending some of your Friday with us. How are you today, my man?
I am doing well, and a wonderful Friday it is as we're getting ready to go into Mother's Day weekend. And to all the mothers out there, happy Mother's Day. It's something special to my wife. She is a mother for sure. So happy Mother's Day to her and all my family members out there, my sisters who are mothers, and to all the mothers out there, enjoy this weekend. And hopefully you folks have got something planned for your mother. If you don't, you still got a day and a half. So let's get to it. Let's get to it. Don't have mom cooking over the weekend. No. Or unless you want a good meal. Yeah, have mom cooking. That's for
sure. Give me the one day where she doesn't have to cook, right?
Yeah, that's true. It's the one day that she doesn't have to cook. It's always nice to do something for mom when you're around. And mom always likes those young kids when they come and give them breakfast in bed, no matter what they've done to the kitchen. When she goes, oh my gosh, the whole time she's in bed, she's thinking, what does that look like out there that I'm going to have to get up and go clean? I tried that a couple times for my mom. I just destroyed the kitchen. But she appreciated it. But she knew what was in store for her the minute she got out of bed.
You know, I never thought about that because my sisters and I did the breakfast in bed bit for my mom growing up. And I guarantee you we left the kitchen a total disaster.
Oh, yeah, just a disaster, right?
And my dad's probably like, I'm not cleaning that. You got to take it, mom. That's your job.
That's right. You did this for Mother's Day. You clean it up. Or it'll be like, don't worry about it. She'll get to it anyway today. She'll get it cleaned up. Oh, no big deal. But to those mothers, happy Mother's Day to all of you for sure. And good day to the soldiers at Fort Hood, Texas, the soldiers in the state of Texas, and all those that fight for us each and every day. Thank you so much for what you do for us. And to the mothers, our military mothers out there, have a wonderful day if you can. And do be safe out there, please.
Yes, indeed. And Coach Gundy has a very special message to all of the mothers out
there.
Oh, no, that's the wrong.
That's not the one, is it?
I was looking for
mother of children.
Mother of children, yes. You children who have mothers, get out there and get it done for on Sunday. Yeah, they have some rain on Sunday. No excuse. Hey, no excuse for that day.
No excuse. Take care of mama. At least you could do is give her a call and maybe a card. And if you could see her in person, go see her in person.
Absolutely.
All right. Right off the bat, Buck, I want to pose a question about the 2026 Texas football team to you.
Okay.
And I'm going to ask you this first. I want to get your answer. And then I'm going to give you some numbers. And then I'm curious if that changes your answer. There's no real right or wrong answer. This is not trivia. This is kind of an opinion question for you.
A trick question.
For Steve Sarkisian, there is ultimately a right or wrong answer. But as a former running backs coach, I figured you were the first and the best person I wanted to ask this to. Who will the Longhorns' short yardage running back be in 2026? Or maybe who should the Longhorns' short yardage running back be in 2026?
Smothers.
You're going Hollywood Smothers?
Yes.
Why is he your choice?
I think he's just a little thicker back. I think he's more of an inside type of rusher. I'm not saying he doesn't have the ability to get outside. He doesn't have the moves, but I think he's got a little bit more power than the other guys. Okay. Even the big time, big freshman. I think he's a veteran player. You know, I mean, it's not like he's played in the toughest league in the country, but I think he's more of an inside type of a runner.
So your three candidates, one of them, Hollywood Smothers. You've got Relique Brown, the other transfer in from Arizona State. And then you mentioned the freshman phenom, Derek Cooper from the state of Florida. Derek Cooper is the biggest of the three, listed at 6'1", 210 pounds on the Texas roster. You've got Hollywood Smothers, second, at 5'11", 195 pounds. And then Raleigh Brown, 5'9", 191.
Yeah, and I'm not saying that Brown can't get it done, because I've seen his body lean and you know, the velocity which he hits a hole, that he could get it done. But if I'm going to – I'll still count in the other veteran who's just a little bit bigger. And I've seen more runs of him inside, you know, and making things happen inside. The freshman, I don't know if I want to have a specialist. I like I said, there's something for everybody. But if I can get my veteran to be the guy who can get those third down runs, fourth down runs, and I feel good, I don't want to give it away by bringing in even a bigger kid in those situations and saying, hey guys, here it comes. Here comes like your punt returner. When he comes in, guess what's happening? He's getting the ball. He's not coming in for us to run play action off of. Now, if you told me they would do some of that, but then again, you want to run the ball. You're not trying to play action pass off of Cooper. If he's in there and it's third and one, you want to hand it to him and get it, right? You're not trying to trick anybody. This isn't trick him. You know, like this wasn't a trick question. This isn't trick him third down, fourth down, right? This is turn around and hand it off and getting it done.
Yeah, and Texas was not good enough at that last year.
No, they weren't. So I think Hollywood right now for me.
Okay. Yeah, I think people believe that eventually Derek Cooper will kind of take that role.
I think when he becomes the back, when these two guys are gone, he's doing it all, BK. He's that all guy. He's that fourth down guy. He's the third down guy, because you're giving it to him on first down and he's not coming out of the game. You know, when that guy's in the game and it's third and one, he's going to start getting the ball. He's going to be the guy.
Yeah. The question is, when is eventually? Is eventually not until next year when the other guys are gone, or is eventually at some point in 2026 where it's like, oh man, Derek Cooper is just too good. We've got to find a way to give him a role in this offense as a
His role is, they're going to be series where I'm bringing him in as he's the guy in there. And it could be the fifth series of the game, but I want to see what that guy can do in games. Those, you know, whether it's Ohio State, Texas State, I want to give him a series where he plays football. I'm not waiting to game six or, you know, when we've got a big lead. I want to see what he does under fire.
I agree with that. So I promised you some numbers.
Okay.
And I wonder if this changes your opinion. I'll give On Texas Football credit for compiling this data here. So, you know, typically when you think about a short yardage / goal line running back, you think of some 220, 230 pound bowling ball, basically just lowers his shoulder and is instantly falling forward for 2 or 3 yards. Texas doesn't really have one of those guys. Again, the closest thing of the real contenders here is Derek Cooper at 6'1", 210 pounds.
Mm-hmm.
This is fascinating. This stat shocked me, because when we've talked about Relique Brown and the way he's been described by everybody is more of a home run hitter, right? Get him on the outside, let him go. He could be a weapon in the passing game. He's small, but he's fast. He can make guys miss in space. A stat from 2025, when needing 3 yards or less to either pick up a first down or score a touchdown, Relique Brown converted 22 of 27 opportunities last year. That is an 81.5% rate. Only one of those 27 attempts went for negative yards. He averaged 6.7 yards per carry in those situations. 7 of those runs went for 10 or more yards. 3 of them went for 20 or more yards. So not only was he like just converting third and short and third and goal kind of situations, he was turning those into explosive plays when given the opportunity. Hollywood Smothers had 12 of those carries last year. So NC State didn't use him as much in those short yardage situations. And he only converted on 5 of them, which is 41.6%. So different situations, different schools, different offensive lines, different systems. I get it. But the data here, and this shocked me too, because I would have thought, hey, maybe Hollywood Smothers, because he's a little bigger, is your better option there. But if you just look at 2025 numbers, Relique Brown was elite in short yardage situations. So he might be the guy who gets that first chance.
Well, if he's the starter, he is going to get those first chances. They're not going to all of a sudden substitute. If he's the starter, if he starts this year, which I think he will, then he's going to be the guy those first until he's not the guy. You know what I'm saying? They're going to give him every opportunity. They know this percentage too. They watch him on film. They know what he's like, how whatever he does. To me, he's a slasher, so he can get that. He can find the spot where he needs to get the first downs. He doesn't get knocked backwards. I mean, in all of his runs, you don't see him go backwards. You see his speed and his quickness. He's going this way. He's got a really nice body lane. So he's going to get every opportunity. I don't think they're substituting for him. I just look at body types, and what I see from film is I thought the other guy, just because he's just a little bit bigger and he runs inside pretty well. You know, you get video of Brown, you get a lot of he beats him outside and he does some things and makes guys miss. Still, his momentum is always going forward. But you don't get a lot of those short – they don't show you short yardage tape. Nobody cares. They just want to know explosive plays. But if he's the starter, he's going to get every chance to do that. You're right.
Yeah. I mean, Relique Brown's compact. He can get skinny through holes. He accelerates quickly. He's got elite change of direction.
And he may not have had this kind of line before either.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I don't know how good Arizona State's line was last year. Like, were they all that good? They kept getting their quarterback hurt seemingly every other week.
I'll say this. So, they were better than this line.
Yeah, the bar was low. Well, they were better than last year's Texas line. I hope they're not better than this year's Texas line.
They were better than last year's line.
Well, the bar was low.
There weren't many that weren't.
Yeah, Lake Travis and Westlake had better lines than Texas's line last year, I think. But I also thought, look, some of it's on the offensive line. I also thought the Texas running backs had too much dancing, too much hesitation.
They had to. The hesitation was because of what was up front. And making a decisive move, you could have made a move right into somebody that was there. But I just think these guys they're better ball carriers. So I expect, like I said, I expect Brown, if Brown is that guy and those numbers BK are on, then yeah, if he's a starter, then he's going to get, you're not going to, you know, in game one, going to say, okay, bring in Hollywood for third and one. No, you're going to leave that same guy in there who's been playing for you. He's going to get it done.
I'm kind of fascinated to see how they deploy these guys throughout the year, right? Is it just, hey, one series, Relique Brown, you're the guy. One series, Hollywood Smothers, you're the guy. One series, Derek Cooper, you're the guy. Or is it, are they going to interchange guys in between series, certain situations, certain personnel packages? Like, what's the exact role?
Yeah, the head coach is going to tell you he's got a feel for it. That's all. Yeah. He's going to tell you, you know, one guy's going really, really well. I'm not taking him out the next, you know, his second series. If he has a great series with a 30-yard run and really gets the ball down the field, I'm not then going to say, okay, you're up next. You know, tint this guy out. No, that guy could be in there for three series, and the next guy could come in series number four. It doesn't have to necessarily be one after the other. It's their turn. It's my turn. It's just how you feel.
You know, and the Texas State game is different than the Ohio State game.
Absolutely.
The SEC games on the Longhorn schedule, but since it's the first game, I'll just use that as an example. Like, let's say Relique Brown is your starter. He gets the first snaps. Let's say he runs for 44 yards and a touchdown on the Longhorns opening drive against the Bobcats. Does he get that second possession? Or is it, well, now let's see what Hollywood Smothers has.
No, I give him a second possession. I'm going to keep that guy feeling positive for more than one series. He goes in there, because if he does it the first series, I expect the second series, they're not all of a sudden just going to start stuffing him. I want him to have two good series. And then maybe the third series, I'll bring another back in and give him a series or two. And then I'm going to get to – Cooper's going to get – I mean, that kid's going to get in this game before halftime. I'm finding a way to get him in the game.
In the Texas State
game. Series, because I'm expecting some explosive plays against Texas State. So,
yeah, that'd be nice. That's what we're all looking for. Now, I guess every head coach might be different when it comes to this, but you kind of had – free reign, or at least close to free reign, when it was regarding which running back you were going to trot out there for certain situations?
Yeah, I had free reign on who was going in. But, you know, we practiced certain stuff, short yardage, goal line, stuff like that. Ricky hated to be taken out of the games for Priest Holmes. But Priest Holmes got it done all the time down the goal line. I mean, he'd go over the top. He'd go through you. He was I had two guys that could get it done. The other guy, you know, with Sean Mitchell, he was always pissed because, why, you know, you don't think I can run down to the goal line? I said, no, you better score your touchdowns from 40 yards in. You need to have some explosive plays because we get down to the 4 or 5, and even if it's your series, guess what? I know you're going to say to him, start pointing to the guy to go back, you know, move back, give me the play. It's going to be no. That's those other guys come in there. I don't take any chances. So I used to tell him, you just got to score long touchdowns. Yeah. It's not that I don't think you can score them from the 8 yard or whatever. I just don't even want to take that chance. Why should I when you got a guy like Priest Holmes or Ricky Williams? I mean, Ricky was fine with that. Ricky was very selfless when it came to carries, except for, you know, when he got me alone somewhere and started talking about his carries. But he always gave way to Priest down to the goal line. He knew that was coming. He'd be looking over like, here he comes. He's going to jump from the 3 yard line, take it off, take off, go over the top. And it wasn't like, I can't do that. It was just like, that was part of what Priest got an opportunity to do. I mean, I just always talk to guys about better make some long runs because down in the goal line, I have a mindset. You know, Howard Griffin, when I was at the University of Illinois, was incredible at that.
Yeah.
And then I had big backs, big halfbacks. Howard was a fullback, but I had big backs and I could have easily kept them in. But Howard was unbelievable when you got down to that, you know, 7 or 8 yard line. So it's just a feel. And the head coach is going to say the same thing. It's just a feel. We don't have anybody guaranteed to that until the one guy can't do it. That's what happens. Mm-hmm. So you figure out if Brown can't do it, then no, they'll move right along to the next guy. They got enough guys to do it.
You think Jabbar Jalouk, even though it's year one for him and Steve Sarkisian's the offensive-minded head coach / offensive coordinator, you think Jalouk is going to be given the ability to pick and choose his spots when it comes to who's out there on the field?
No, he hadn't been around here long enough.
Okay. Yeah, that's what I wonder how that – I don't know if Sark will ever get asked that.
He hadn't been with Sarkisian long enough to be able to say this because Sark is at every practice. He sees everything too. So he just hadn't been here, you know, year number 2 or 3 maybe, you know, when some other new guys come in, different guys come in. But Sark knows what he wants out of his offense, so he sees it. He talks to him about who should be the guy down there.
Whoever answers it, whatever the answer is, I mean, Texas just has to be better in those short yardage.
Yes, they do. There's no doubt.
Goal line situations, right? You just couldn't feel good about 3rd and 2 or 4th and 1 or goal line situations because this team just didn't have the ability to pick up those yards on the ground. It almost felt like those turned into obvious passing situations because of the Longhorns' inability to run the ball for tough yards. And like you said, the O-line got pushed back way too often. Yeah, I think at times the running backs were a little too hesitant to hit whatever holes were there. They weren't there that often. So the hope is both of those elements are better, and that leads to, you know, Texas having a better running game everywhere on the field, but especially when it comes to those hard-earned yards that could be the difference between winning and losing ball games. Buck.
Yeah, I didn't have a lot of specialists when it came to the run game, except for down, you know, maybe down the goal line, you know, 3rd and 4th down, same to me. That's goal line stuff to me, so I got to get that. But I had more specialists in the passing game as running backs. I mean, I have walk-on guys. Like I told you, I said, this is how you get in the game. This is how your girlfriend Susie gets a chance to see you. So when you get this chance, catch the ball and fall down. I mean, seriously, and the head coach never said a word to me. He knew what I had guys that would catch for a first down and get to the ground. And, you know, people would be like, why can't he run for another 3 yards? I'm like, because he's not told to run for another, he's told to get a first down. Give me a first down and don't fumble that ball. Just get down. Come back, you'll get another chance on a 3rd down and whatever I need because this is what your job is.
Yeah.
I didn't have many runners in that situation, more passing guys out of the backfield for that.
Yeah, well, when you think about short yardage situations, you shouldn't need to get cute, right?
No.
You shouldn't need gadget stuff. It should just be quarterback gets the ball, turns to his side or turns around, hands it to somebody, and boom, you know they're getting the first down every single
time. I find a way to run over my left guard and my All-American left tackle, whoever was over that guy, dominate him and get me a yard, you know?
Exactly. And a couple of things that helped Texas. I mean, you've got Arch Manning, who's a big body and a very good runner himself.
Yeah, that dude's going to start keeping on some of those deals where you think he's going, there's a yard to go. That guy put it on his hip and go around the corner and see you later.
Yeah, well, I thought he was Texas's best short yardage / red zone weapon last year.
Oh, for sure.
Especially in the running game, so – You know, I mean, he had 10 rushing touchdowns. Trey Wisner had 3, and he led all the Texas running backs.
Now, yeah, I mean, I like what you told me about. I like the numbers for Brown. I think that's exceptional. That's just numbers. Those numbers they just tell you the truth. So.
Yeah, that blew my mind, right? I know the Big 12 is not the SEC. I get that. But to be, you know, 81.5% on 3rd and 3 or, you know, 3 yards to the goal line or less, I mean, that is an absurd success rate. And Jabbar Jalouk, I know Chip Brown has mentioned this quote a couple of times when we've talked to him on Wednesdays. I mean, Jabbar Jalouk recently called him a Tasmanian double.
Yes.
AKA a bowling ball with razor blades in it.
Like, yeah, that's my guy.
Yeah, that works. That's the guy I want in as many situations as possible, but definitely, yeah, bowling ball with razor blades in it. I'll take that in 3rd and 1. Thank you very much.
Yeah, that's those are the guys. Those are the kind of guys you want that to get that done that way.
And something else that I think Texas could implement, we're kind of talking about picking one, right? Who's the short yardage back? You know, Jake brought it up in the comments. What about 21 personnel? I mean, why not? Like, how tough would it be? Let's say it's 3rd and 3. And you've got Arch Manning in the shotgun. You've got Relique Brown to his right and Derek Cooper to his left. And if you're a defense, you're like, all three of these guys can pick up this first down. I don't know who's getting the ball. Like, to me, those guys are all weapons. And obviously, Hollywood Smothers, you throw them in there too. Like, those guys are all weapons to where you force the defense to try to figure out, okay, what we're going to do here. That makes your short yardage offense way more difficult to stop.
Yeah, and if you're expecting that freshman to play as a freshman – I mean, his coach is already working on him as a run blocker and a pass protector. They already know what he can do, what he's capable of doing, that he does have the guts to stick his face in there. That means he's going to do it both in the run and the pass. So if you see both of them in there, now you're not confused on, okay, the freshman's in there. He's the bigger guy. He's getting the ball. No, he may be the better blocker, you know. And so I would expect that kid, he sounds like a mature football. He's different. He's already seems like he's the different kind of guy. So he's ready to go block. He wants to play. He wants to play as a freshman. He doesn't want to sit around all year on a year where this team may be special, where he's just some guy getting in the game every once in a while, you know, as a gimmick. No, he wants to be a part of this whole thing.
For sure. And the coaches have to trust him. I mean, that's a big part of this for Derek Cooper, right? Like,
and it may be blocking first. And it may be the guy who's, like you said, with that kind of personnel, be the blocker, the main blocker.
Pass protection. Initially. Blitz pickup, also ball security, right? Like, it's, you know, going from high school. Again, going from the ACC and the Big 12 to the SEC is a bit of a jump, but obviously going from high school to the SEC is a monumental jump. So, yeah, those kinds of things, do your coaches trust you in those big moments? That's going to determine how much Derek Cooper gets to play, because I think he's got a lot of ability to where he might be good enough right now to be a key contributor on this offense, but he's got to earn the trust of his staff to, again, put him out there in big moments.
Yeah, I mean, the guys that are different, you know immediately. The running back coach already knows that kid is different. He's just trying to fine-tune him. So not only is he good for this year, but he's really going to be exceptional. When the other guys are gone, he is the man. Mm-hmm. And he's the man in short yardage. He's the guy coming out of the backfield catching balls. He's catching screen passes. You're not doing a lot of substitution with him. There may be one other back, but you're not going to have 3 or 4 of them that are, you know, you don't take him out of the game. He's the guy that he has to stay. He's one of those type of kids over the next couple of years.
Yeah, and I think, look, part of this year for Derek Cooper is trying to prove to the coaching staff that, hey, I know you guys went out and got 2 portal backs this past year, but you don't need to do that next year because I'm
absolutely.
I'm him.
Yeah, I'm him. Now, you may have to go get a guy who's going to back me up.
Right. But yeah, you may need to get somebody, but you don't need to go get 2, like, first-team all-conference players like you did. I got this.
Yeah, I mean, those kids that are on your team and you go to the portal, they know why you're going to the portal. They know who you're going to get. They know if you go get 2 running backs like that, they feel like you don't have anything coming. But now that kid, he will know if you're going to get a backup or you're going to get a starter. He knows that. He understands what that means.
Mm-hmm. Last year, the Longhorns converted 63.8% of red zone appearances into touchdowns. I'd like for that number to get a bit higher.
Absolutely.
This year. And again,
I'd like for first down runs to be better. You and I both are so that you can make a decision on 2nd down. Do you have to throw or can you throw just for the hell of it? You don't have to, you don't feel like this is a must. We have to throw the ball. No, we've just picked up 6 yards on the run. If we want to throw the ball, we will. But if we want to run it 2 times in a row, we'll do that too. But it's not like that run, get stonewalled, get a yard and a half, and then have to throw for the next 2 downs where you know what you have to do.
Right.
And if, exactly. if you think you're going to trick them on third down and you're going to go 3rd and 4 and then turn around and run the ball like they tried to do in the past and get stuffed and then you end up punting, no. You want to dictate what you want to do to the defense this year.
This should be the best offense in the 6 years that Steve Sarkisian has been the head coach at Texas.
I would agree. I know they got dynamic receivers, but the 1 year where they had Matthew Golden, that was just like, that just seemed like, my God, they are so good. Those receivers are so good. Well, because they had a great tight end too. I mean, that goes along with it. That I counted the tight end. He might as well have been a wide out, the numbers that he had. So
you could almost argue the year before when they had Worthy and Mitchell together.
Yeah, Worthy and Mitchell together. And they had the tight end then, right? I mean, this was
Sanders, and they had Jordan Whittington. I'd say the 2023 team maybe had the better weapons on the outside. 2024, you had Isaiah Bond, who never quite turned into what you hoped he was going to be.
No, he wasn't what you thought he was going to be.
You did have Gunnar Helm, though, the tight end who you're talking about. He was obviously fantastic. So, like, those are the two best, without question, 23 and 24, the two best offenses so far in the Sark era, right? Those two Quinn Ewers years. You've got more talent this year, I think, than you did in either of those two. Now, I don't know if your offensive line is as good as it was in either of those two. So, can your offensive line hold up enough to where you give your talent the time to make the plays that they need to make? But
once again, this quarterback is going to save. If your offensive line is just good, they don't have to be great, but they got to be at least good. I don't want to say, I don't want to keep saying if they're just average. That's just not enough to win a national championship. They had to be good because the quarterback is good enough to some of your faults. He's going to be able to overcome them in his second year doing this. You know, he knows where the gap. He already knows right now where the weak links are. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah.
One guy he hasn't seen play yet, but he knows the weak links from where they came from and on that offensive line right now. He already knows. He knows if Baker has gotten any better or is he still kind of the weak link.
Why are you saying weak links? Can it just be one? Does it have to be two or three?
Oh, the quarterback knows where they are. He knows where the weak links are at wide receiver running. He knows all. He has to know all of that stuff.
Yeah, you know? And I think he does. I don't think there are any weak links at running back and wide receiver. And I like the tight end.
I don't either. Well, he knows who the best one is, the next best, and the next best. I won't call him. When I talk about the offensive line, I talk about weak links. He knows which one isn't up to snuff. If they're good, then he can make up for a lot of things. They can't be, just below. They can't just be better than they were last year. They have to be good in order to get to where you get. You can't get just a little bit better than last year won't get you a national championship. They got to be good.
I think they got to be very good. I don't know if they're going to be very good, but I think to win a national championship,
you got to stay healthy and they got to be good.
Very good in the trenches. I don't think you can win a title if you're just good. Now, defensive line, I think, is very good to elite. I got no questions about that group. The offensive line, can they be very good?
I don't know about very good, but I know this. They got to be sick of people like us talking about how bad they were. That has to drive the coach crazy, not just the head coach. But if I'm the offensive line coach, if I was the running back coach and people were talking about my group being the worst running back group since the 40s, do you know how pissed I would be? It would be all day, every day, me reminding those guys of that. When I see them walking in the office, I'd let them know. I put 1944 up on the board so they saw that every day. That would be my motto. I'd be after them all the time about that. If that was the second worst group of runners in the history of the school at Texas.
You know how to shut us up?
Yeah, that's true.
We'll play better. Like, we're not unfair. At least I don't think we're unfair. I might be biased, but.
No, I we're not unfair. I mean, we didn't totally dog them. They dogged themselves.
They were bad. Like every other radio show and podcast and beat writer and fan saw the same thing that we saw. The offensive line was not good last year. It was bad. I'm being nice by saying not good. It was bad. So it was the biggest problem on a Texas team that totally underachieved.
And the runners were bad. The runners weren't good either.
No, it wasn't just the offensive line. The running game, the runners were not great. I mean, Arch obviously had his struggles early on. The receivers dropped too much. The defense had their issue. So it was,
they were not good offensively.
It takes a village. It takes a village to underachieve. It's the ultimate team game. The team has to be bad if you're going to not be good. But the offensive line was the worst problem that Texas had last year.
Yeah, okay, that's fair. That's fair enough right there.
So they got to get that cleaned up for sure. And $5 Dill says, look, the O-line in 23 and 24 wasn't that good. You couldn't run goal line against OSU.
That's true.
That was in the semifinals of the college football playoff. Last year's Texas offensive line couldn't run the ball against UTEP. So, yeah, I'm not trying to make the 23 and 24 O-line sound like the Cowboys in the 90s. But, yeah, they were a hell of a lot better than what we had last season. There's no doubt about that. No doubt. All right, we'll take your thoughts. Good Texas football conversation to open up a Friday show. We'll get back into the Longhorn chatter. Evan Veith of Inside Texas will join us at the top of the hour. We've got some NBA playoffs, though, we need to get into. The Buck did make the people some money. Get to a little Longhorn baseball conversation as well. But before anything else, my friend, how about our first round of sponsor shout-outs?
You know, for a long time, I was searching for the right support for my back, and I finally got it. Well, it's been 20 years now. I found out about Relax the Back. Relax the Back embraces a holistic approach for a healthier lifestyle. And, folks, my back couldn't be happier. And you can make yourself feel a lot better, too. If you got people in your family that complain about lower back pain, neck pain, send them over to the Relax the Back store. They have got everything that you're looking for and more, as a matter of fact. Zero gravity recliners, select massage chair, adjustable mattress sets, of course, Tempur-Pedic pillows and mattress sets there at Relax the Back. Two great locations. One is at the Hill Country Galleria across from Whole Foods, and in North Austin at the Gateway Shopping Center, right across the street from the Container Store. Live pain-free like the Buck at Relax the Back. I'm feeling good, BK, after being over at Sue Patrick yesterday and being in that metal chair. Guess what? My Relax the Back chair is saving me, brother.
You got to start bringing that chair to the shows we do on the road.
Yeah, this one's too heavy. This one's too big.
It is pretty big.
It's going up and down the steps with this thing, no way.
No chance. Just lifting that thing in the car is too much.
I know. Oh, my goodness.
It's sturdy. Shout out to Relax the Back. Also, some love to Audiovisual Consultations. You know what? How about a word from our guy, Tom McKay, and the kid over at AVC?
Now, stepping up to the plate is a household name. Weighing in at roughly 115 pounds with a wingspan of 98 inches, it's Samsung.
Kid, I know it's baseball season, but this isn't what I meant when I said to incorporate sports into the company commercial.
Sorry, old man. I just want everyone to know that Audiovisual Consultations can make your home feel like a stadium.
That's true. Audiovisual provides stadium surround sound, huge screen video, controlled lighting, and even temperature control. On our roster, every customer is an MVP.
Sounds like Audiovisual knows how to score a home run with our customers.
All right, kid. That's enough with the baseball puns.
But I'm trying to tell everyone that Audiovisual is a real catch. You'll glove our services.
Kid?
There's nothing coming out of left field when you give us a call. We won't break your balls.
Kid, we only have a minute.
Pitch, please. I don't need your batitude right now.
Rest assured, listeners, Audiovisual is much better at installing and designing custom home theaters than we are at making jokes.
Just check our stats. Give us a call at 512-255-8678 or visit us online at avconsultations.com.
Very nice. Of course, our friends over at Texas Orthopedics, you're seeking specialized patient-focused orthopedic care. You're that weekend warrior that's starting to feel the pains of knees and ankles and shoulders, and you just don't know what to do. What should I do? Do I get surgery? Do I go to somebody and maybe have non-surgical? Well, they do both. They do surgery and non-surgical orthopedic care for children and adults, spinal care, sports medicine, joint replacement. Dr. Danny, Dr. Stockton are fantastic people and dedicated orthopedic surgeons there. Their goal is to get you right back into good health and the great quality of life that you deserve. Texas Orthopedics is the largest independent orthopedic practice in Central Texas. For more information, go to txortho.com.
Yes, indeed. Love Texas Orthopedics. And also a shout out to our friends at the Altstadt Brewery. If you're looking for something to do this weekend, how about a trip to the Altstadt Brewery? If your mom's a beer drinker, wifey's a beer drinker.
Yeah.
You know what makes for a good Mother's Day gift? Six pack of Altstadt beer.
Absolutely.
Maybe a couple of six packs of Altstadt beer. Or maybe a trip to Fredericksburg. Maybe she's wanted to go check out the wineries out there You're like, you know what? I'll go, but can we stop by Altstadt first? And you should. I mean, this place is awesome. Of course, you get to try all the great Altstadt beers. They've got a German-style restaurant serving up all sorts of European cuisine from a former Michelin star chef. They've got an indoor venue, live music. They've got an outdoor beer garden, something for everybody out there. Go check out the Altstadt Brewery. And again, whatever you've got going on this weekend, watching sports, going out, hanging out at home, whatever, your good times are made better with a great beer. The best beer that you could find is Altstadt. Please remember to drink it responsibly. It is the official beer of BK, and it should be the official beer of you as well. It is Altstadt beer. No impurities, no regrets. All right, little NBA playoff conversation here, Buck. You made the people some money last night.
Yeah, nothing big.
You had three plays. There were only three games, two in the NBA and one in the NHL. You got both of your basketball picks correct. And your Philadelphia Flyers did not come through for
yeah,
you.
Yeah, that's partly on you. You're hammering me about being a Flyers fan from way back and not trusting the Flyers. They stink.
Oh, they beat the Penguins in round one.
Pittsburgh's no good either.
Carolina's very good.
Yes.
And they were the best team in the East all year long.
Are they now winning? Are they 3-0 now?
They're up 3-0 in this series, and okay, they've played seven games in the playoffs. They've won all seven of them.
Yeah, it's over for the Flyers.
So they're making pretty quick work. You know, you can't put a gold star lock on game four. That's tomorrow in the NHL. I will let you do that, even though the Hurricanes are huge favorites, so I shouldn't be giving you the chance.
That game, is that back in Carolina?
Philly.
Still in Philly? I'll take 150,000 unit play on Carolina to sweep these goofballs from Philly.
See, that's – I feel like I shouldn't give you this because Carolina is like a minus 200 favorite. That's easy money right there.
I'll put 200,000 units on that then.
Here's how it's going to have to work.
No. You can't change – hey.
We do spreads in basketball. You want to do spreads in hockey now?
No.
Okay. Well, then I got to play the juice. I can't gift you units, sir. You got to do this the right way. If you want 200,000 units on the Canes, that's fine. But you're only going to get 100,000 units if they win. You're going to lose 200,000 if you lose.
Okay. It's worth it. This is a sweep.
Okay. So you're doing a 2-1. I'm writing that down. 100,000 units on the Hurricanes tomorrow. All right, we'll get to your other picks in a moment. But going back to last night's action, more so in the NBA, the Detroit Pistons, you got that pick right, sir. You were very confident in the Pistons. You had 100,000 units on them to cover the 3.5 against Cleveland. They did 107-97, the final score. Five straight wins for Detroit, by the way. Remember, they went down 3-1 to Orlando in round one. They've won five straight games, so they've started.
They're kind of high in the hog right now.
Yeah. The big storyline from this game has nothing to do with Detroit. It has everything to do with James Harden.
Oh, no, not James Harden in the playoffs again.
Who just continues to be the least clutch star in NBA history. Last night, 3-for-13 shooting. He had just 10 points. He also had four turnovers, so more turnovers than baskets made, including a huge one in the last minute with the Cavs down by two possessions with a chance to, you know, get back into the game and maybe force overtime. He stinks.
Yes, he does.
How about some postseason numbers, not just from last night? This just goes to show you how horrible James Harden is this time of the year. Last night was his 182nd career playoff game. It was the 36th time where he's made three or fewer field goals. It's nearly 20%. And this guy's a Hall of Fame player. This guy led the league in scoring multiple years. This guy's been an MVP. 20% of his playoff games, he's made three shots or less.
Wow.
Last night was the 46th time where he's had as many or more turnovers than field goals made. More than 25% of the playoff games he's played, and he's turned the ball over as much or more than the amount of shots that he's made.
I'm not throwing him the ball.
This year he's played nine playoff games. in four of them, he's had more turnovers than field goals made. So he's getting worse. And he broke Bob Cousy's record, which I always was told Bob Cousy was good. I didn't realize he was also a bum. Bob Cousy's record for the most playoff games in which he shot 25% or less in NBA history. Minimum of 10 attempts. So he's jacking up shots like he always does. He's James Harden. But in the regular season, especially in his prime, they were going in. In the postseason, they're not.
No.
And I just
even in his prime, they're not going in the postseason.
No, no. I mean, that was the problem in Houston. He'd put up ridiculous regular season numbers, and he wasn't this bad in the playoffs, but his production would dip in a huge way. And that's why sounds the Rockets like Aaron, could never get like over the
Aaron
hump.
Judge. Sounds like the direction of Aaron Judge.
Kind of is. I think Aaron Judge is a better player than James Harden, but yeah, I mean, he's a guy who in the postseason just hasn't been good enough. I think Aaron Judge has had more big playoff moments than James Harden has in his
career.
And Aaron Judge has been to the finals, the World Series, while James Harden has not. Cleveland traded for this guy. Any team that trades for James Harden, and I kind of felt this way about Russell Westbrook. Funny enough, those guys were teammates multiple times in their careers. Any team that trades for one of those guys and thinks he's the guy who's going to get us over the
hump? No, he's
not. That's what Cleveland did this year. And he stinks in the playoffs. It's just we have a big enough sample size now to know. And it wasn't just him. I mean, Cleveland as a team totally fell apart last night. But James Harden, the point guard, the guy who has the ball in his hands more than anybody else, he continues to absolutely blow.
And he just gives the ball away.
He just gives it away. He just gives it away. Your other game last night, the Oklahoma City Thunder. They've played six playoff games. They've won six playoff games. They go up 2-0 on the Lakers, 125-107, the final score. This game was much more competitive than game one. The Lakers actually led by 4 points kind of midway through the third, but Oklahoma City went on a big run. Funny enough, when SGA was on the bench, that's when Oklahoma City kind of turned it on and took control, and they're too good. They're too deep. They also get every single call.
Yes, they do.
I can't imagine you were awake for this. I don't know if you saw this on SportsCenter, but like literally the Lakers huddled with the refs after the game on the court. Like, please stop falling for everything that they do. And I don't like the Lakers at all. And LeBron's a flopper. Like, everybody's a flopper in the league. But the Thunder, the way they play basketball is very
tough. They're much more physical than they seem to be. They're kind of falling all over the place. Like every time they come down, somebody touches somebody. I see a guy falling into the stands or whatever. That's garbage.
It's garbage. And it feels like anytime the Thunder flop around, they get the calls. And anytime the Lakers like try to be physical, it's a foul on them.
Yeah.
So it's very and LA is not the first team to deal with this in the last couple of years. Like so many teams and players have come out and said like, these guys are a nightmare to play against because and look, to the Thunder's credit, it's not their fault. They're gaming the system. They're doing what they should be doing, and they do it better than anybody else does.
Quit fouling the you-know-what out of them. You know what I mean? Come on.
Yeah, Sean Miller. But it is just a tough product to watch if you're a basketball fan. And the Thunder
– They're good.
They won it all. They've won every playoff game so far. They're probably going to win it all again. I mean, obviously, the Spurs can be the team to get in their way. I don't think anybody in the East is good enough to beat them. So it kind of feels like if you're rooting against OKC, you're rooting for San Antonio right now. But I know the Spurs beat them 4 out of 5 in the regular year. I wouldn't pick the Spurs to beat OKC right now. Like they're just – and they're doing all this, again, without Jalen Williams, who's their second-best player. And SGA SGA averaged 31 in the season. He's averaging 20 in this round, and the Thunder are still killing the Lakers.
Yeah, Lakers have no – they got plenty of excuses. They're just not good enough to beat them.
Yeah, without Luka. I mean, even with Luka, I don't think they're good enough to beat them. But without Luka, there's
– no.
I mean, game three is tomorrow in L.A., and the Thunder are 8.5-point favorites. Like the Thunder are going to be favored in every game in this series.
I'll take the Lakers for 50,000 unit play.
You're giving them one?
I'm giving them one.
Are you giving them a win, or are you just giving them a cover?
I'm just giving them some hope. That's about it, that they'll lose by 7.
Okay. Yeah, so there's
they won't get run off their own court.
Yes, I don't know. I have a hard time thinking the Lakers are going to win a game unless Luka magically.
No, LeBron's going to get every court. LeBron's going to be laying on the floor holding his ankles and everything else, and he's going to get the calls at home this one.
Maybe.
I mean, you're huddling around the referees. The NBA, they're going to make sure that this one, the Lakers, they may even get a win.
I feel like the NBA, just for some reason, they really like these smaller market teams and want them to be successful, which feels contradictory to how a lot of sports typically operate, where it's like we want LA and Boston and New York to always be the best every single year.
Well, this particular small market is dominating over
the last year. It was San Antonio forever. And as a guy, I don't hate this iteration of the Spurs the way I did the childhood Spurs, but it's just like, God, they won the lottery again. Like, how does this keep working for them? And now I feel like that's what Oklahoma City has become. Yes. They've become the new San Antonio, where the league just kind of goes out of their way to make sure that they are taken care of. And I don't like it very much. So we'll see what happens there. And tonight, speaking of San Antonio, Buck, the Spurs are back in action. Two games in the NBA, two game threes. We'll start with, I guess, the first game. Can your 76ers get on the board against the Knicks?
They are at home, correct?
They are at home. And they are 1.5-point favorites.
Yeah, let's go ahead. Let's go, and I'll show you how I love my 76ers. I'll put 50,000 in to play on the Sixers.
Okay, minus 1.5 at home tonight.
Yeah.
Do the Sixers fans outnumber the Knicks fans like Joel Embiid?
No, there'll be more Knicks fans. That's okay.
Joel Embiid going to play tonight?
It's a game-time decision. We're going to make that a game-time decision.
He's been listed as questionable for this one. So
guys who do their own surgeries on their – have an appendectomy and does their own surgeries, he's got a chance. He'll play. He's physically ready to go now.
Are you reporting that he took his own appendix out?
Yeah. That's how he showed the toughness of playing those couple of games. Now he's kind of – he's a little bit weakened from that, but he'll be there tonight for him.
Okay, the appendix is affecting the ankle and the knee and the hip and everything else.
Yeah, when you do your own surgeries, those things are likely to happen.
The appendix bone is connected to the hip bone, as that old song once said.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, Philly is your pick. And then Spurs-Wolves in Minnesota. San Antonio, a 4.5-point road favorite. Obviously, that series tied at a game apiece. San Antonio, a big-time bounce back in game two, dominating Minnesota in every facet of the game. They set the tone early and stepped on the Wolves' throats. Does Minnesota get the bounce back at home, or do the Spurs go up for the first time in this series?
I think the Spurs go up. I'll take 50,000 to play on the Spurs.
I do too.
They'll get this is their road win.
And again, I'm still trying to figure out how healthy Ant-Man really is. And, you know, he's played 25 and 24 minutes in the first two games of the series. Does he go beyond that in this one? Just if the Spurs, if Wemby remembers he's taller and bigger than everybody else on the floor, then he's just such a tough matchup for anybody, but especially this Minnesota team. It's just, can those young role players on San Antonio step up the way that they did? Like, the guys who set the tone for the Spurs in game two were Wemby and Fox. They need to set the tone tonight. Again, when you go on the road, your role players aren't always as good away from home. Those guys have to set the tone.
Yes, they do.
Can Champagne have a good night? Can Castle have a good night? Can somebody, can Cornette make an impact off the bench? Can Harper have it? They got plenty of options. It's a deep team. Can somebody join those two? But those two need to be there, I think, for San Antonio.
I mean, Castle have a big night tonight.
Yeah, I like that pick. I do too. He almost feels like he's a veteran at this point. Year three in the league.
Right.
Some of those guys he might be. But, I like the Spurs in this game as well. And then in hockey, or on the subject of Gold Star locks, you've got two games tonight. Montreal at Buffalo. Sabres lead that one 1-0.
And I'll take a 50,000 to play on them because they'll win again.
Sticking with the home team in that?
Yeah.
And then you've got Vegas and Anaheim. Series tied at 1, going down to Orange County.
I'll take the Ducks. For 50,000 in a play.
The Mighty Ducks.
The Mighty Ducks. I'm about to make you people money.
Okay.
We're going to get well this weekend.
I feel like I've heard that before.
The last couple of years, it's just what happens.
Well, it's happened. Not in these playoffs. I feel like you've said that in these playoffs.
We got to give the people something to watch and get them excited about it. Plus, the end of school's coming. They got vacations. Gas prices are up. Fuel's up. They need me to come through now.
You're just building up the drama. I like this.
Yes.
You don't want it to be easy. You're building up the suspense. No. You're creating conflict. This is what happens in good movies, right? There's always a problem that someone's got to solve. You've created the problem of being down 300,000 units at this moment in time, but you're going to be the hero to solve the problem and get everybody right and have the happy ending like Deshaun Watson always wanted.
Yeah, like, listen, I like to be up and stay up, folks, just so you know that. Okay. I don't like the drama.
Why do you do it every year? You give us the drama every year.
I don't like the drama. I like when I'm up 400,000 units and I can play free and easy. Right now, I'm just holding on for dear lives, never to freaking bet anything on the Flyers ever again. No. They're done.
You've got one more game you can bet on. See, we don't have lines for Sunday yet, but today and tomorrow's games we do. The basketball game, the other basketball game tomorrow. You already gave a pick on the Lakers against the Thunder. But Pistons, Cavs, game three in Cleveland.
Yeah, I'll take the Cleveland Cavaliers for 100,000 units there.
Care what the line is?
6.
Who do you think's favored?
Cleveland.
Okay, that's 4.5. You're getting a better number than you thought.
Yeah, I'll take Cleveland for 100,000 to play at home because they have to win that game.
They do. And the Cavs are 4-0 at home in these playoffs. They haven't won a road game, right? Their first round series against Toronto was the home team won all 7 games.
Right.
Which works when you're the higher seed. Cleveland is not the higher seed this time, so they need to change that strategy. But, yeah, they obviously have to take care of business in these next two.
Yep, we'll know through that.
Can James Harden pass the ball to his team is the biggest question.
Yeah, they got the same color jerseys that you're wearing, James.
It shouldn't be that difficult to figure out. But for,
after all these years of playing basketball, who's your team and who's the opposing team? You should be able to figure that out.
And they call him Little Game James.
Wow.
Now everybody named James is Big Game James.
Yeah.
I don't know why Little Game James hasn't become like the nickname for the beard. He ain't the beard anymore. He's Little Game James. Sorry about that, Hardo. Can't have it.
Terrible.
Well, Buck, it is official. Evan Vieth will join us in a few minutes. That's not what's official. But something we talked about maybe a week or two ago about being a possibility, and it felt like a matter of when, not if, this was going to happen. The win was yesterday. The NCAA tournament will officially expand to 76 teams starting next year.
And we're doing it in the same time frame. I mean, it won't be any longer, will it? Will it still stay within the same, they say?
So what's going to change is how the first four operates, right? The first four is kind of going away, and instead there will be a 12-game opening round.
So those matter, and they matter.
Yeah, they're kind of like play-in games, which you know, Texas has obviously been a part of those the last 2 years. Now, technically, they count as tournament games, which I think is kind of ridiculous, but whatever, it's just verbiage. But instead of, you know, 4 of those games on Tuesday and Wednesday, you're now going to have 12 of those games on Tuesday and Wednesday. So the tournament's still going to start the same day. You'll still have the round of 64 on Thursday and Friday the way it's been. You just have more of those play-in opening round games, if you will. And it's both for the men's and the women's. Yep. And for the men's side, you know, they're going to keep games in Dayton, but they're also going to pick a second city to put the other set. So 6 games will be in Dayton, and then 6 games will be somewhere else west of the Mississippi River is the expectation. And they will just do that. And the winner of those games will fill out the remainder of the bracket.
There you go. Put that crap in Fresno or something.
Oh, you're going that far west?
Yeah, but go ahead.
Nobody goes. California sports fans suck. No one's going to go to those games.
I'm saying. Nobody can't. They're not going. Put them way out there.
Yeah, and it'll be half of the 24 opening round teams will be the lowest seeded automatic qualifiers. So you'll still get those 16 versus 16. Oh, and now you'll get 15 versus 15 games. And then the other half will be the at-large type. Again,
in other words, folks, your brackets will be all screwed up really early this year.
Well, I mean, the way it's worked in the past is you don't have to pick the first four games. Like, the brackets don't count until the round of 64. So
these matter.
I don't know if it's going to remain that way or if all of a sudden ESPN and Yahoo and CBS and all the people who make these bracket challenges, if they're like, no, now you have to accurately pick the opening round games too. I don't know. It's a great question because that's what people love maybe the most about March Madness is filling out a bracket. How does this get impacted by these rules? So, yeah, people hate it.
And this one, you'll have to be getting ready 2 weeks in advance so you get your bracket in on time.
Right. Well, again, Selection Sunday is the same day, so you don't have much time.
I know. You don't have a lot of time.
So I don't think they're going to change the way the brackets are done. I think it's still going to operate the way it's been done.
Sure.
Maybe there's like a separate challenge. If you want to pick those opening round games, you can. But if you want to do it the way you've been doing it, then you could keep that. But, yeah, the largest increase since the tournament went to 64 teams in 1985.
Course, so how many are we at now?
76.
Yeah, we'll be the 80s.
Men's and women.
Here shortly.
Just more March Madness. And I'll say this, like, we all know this is about money. There's no hot take you could have that says anything opposite. But I do get a little annoyed when some fans are complaining about this. If you're like a diehard college basketball fan who watches from November on, then I think you can be upset about this because it does kind of diminish the value of the regular season. But so many people out there aren't college basketball fans until March.
Right.
Like, all they watch is the tournament, which is why the tournament is the only thing that makes money for college basketball all year round. So if you're one of those fans who's like, I don't care about college basketball until March, you're the reason this is happening. Because everyone's heard and everyone's seen the numbers of how much you watch in March. So the NCAA and the TV partners are like, well, let's just put more games in March. Because people like the tournament.
Yep.
So, again, I don't love it. You're entitled to your opinion to love it or not love it. But if you're one of those, I don't care about college basketball until the tournament, and then why are they adding more games to the tournament, people? Then you're talking out of both sides of your mouth.
Yes, you are.
So there's my take. But there you go. Starting next year, men's and women's, by the way. I pray that Texas does not find itself in the opening round. Oh. Something would have gone horrifically wrong if year two under Sean Miller ends up with Texas playing in Dayton or where'd you say Fresno?
Fresno, yeah.
Putting them in Fresno. I don't want to see Impractical Jokers ads during a Texas basketball opening round game again. I can't deal with that 3 years in a row. All right. I can't deal with it. So we'll take your thoughts. The code of text line 512-222-9328. All right, before we chop it up with Evan Veith, we'll talk some Texas baseball. Big series for the Longhorns in Knoxville this weekend. We'll get some Texas basketball and football thoughts as well with Evan. But before he jumps on, how about our next round of sponsor shout-outs?
So our good friends over at Sue Patrick, which was a fantastic event yesterday over at Sue Patrick. We met a lot of folks and a lot of people came in. Mother's Day special still available for you. You got today, you got Saturday, but get it done. And you can get it done over at, of course, Sue Patrick's. They've got some really, really nice gear there for mom. They really do. They've got purses. They've got shoes. I mean, the Longhorn shoes, the Nike shoes were incredible. Those are nice, BK. That's a nice pair of kicks right there that Jay's got over at Sue Patrick's. They've got all kinds of Texas-themed gifts, items, a wide variety of men's and women's clothing, some new polos over there. New shirts, go out to dinner shirts, folks. You're going to love it when you go over to Sue Patrick. Plenty of free parking right there available for you. Online orders of $59 or more. Free curbside pickup. The Jelly Cats are there. And what's the other deal that's over there, BK? What were the other things? Not the Jelly Cats headquarters any longer. What are the name of that? What's the name of that? The stuff that the kids like? Tell me what that is again.
Neato.
What the hell is that? Neato. Is that another form of Beanie Baby?
No, it's like squishy sensory toys.
Sensory toys, like take them on the airplane with you to keep yourself calm. If you're in the middle aisle, you should have this instead of elbowing both sides.
Yeah, you have to grab those toys instead of whoever's sitting next to you like that.
Oh, I got you. There you go. Well,
that's what you were doing. I thought you were
Ninos, they're called.
Neato.
Neato. Who's into it in your family? Your sister's into Neatos?
My girlfriend is into the Neato.
Okay, then they must cost some coin. They must not be in the Jellycat range then.
No, they don't. They sell really? It's just a craze these days, man. Like, they sell out like crazy. Every time they get a new shipment in, within 2 hours, they're sold out at Sue Patrick.
So does Bucky need to get into the Nidos? Because, you know, I like to collect these things for my grandkids, give them to my grand, you know, grandson, my, you know, my granddaughter, instead of, I don't like to keep a lot of things for myself.
I don't know. Maybe. The Nidos.
All right. For more information, go to SuePatrick.com, folks.
Yes, indeed. And also shout out to our friends at Early Bird CBD. Our guy Michael with the comment. Early shout out to Early Bird. It's on nice. The way. Thank you nice. For supporting our sponsors, Michael. And hey, we love Early Bird and we know you will too. Don't forget the promo code. You can be like Mike. If you use the promo code Bucky, you're going to get 20% off Early Bird CBD. They've got the drops. Drop these into any drink, your juice, your sparkling
water. Use that before my last round of golf. Shot a smooth 80, 88. And that's fine with me. 88's okay. Anything in the 80s right now is good. Been taking some money from my buddies. Thank you, Early Bird.
Were you playing at Peter Pan or something?
No. Played at a legitimate golf course, Valor Creek in Blanco.
I remember that, Blanco. Yeah, well, hey, you can be like the buck with the drops on the golf course. They've got the gummies as well. I take them just to relax. It's Friday. I am telling you right now, tonight I will be – I'll probably go gummy tonight with the Early Bird CBD.
There you go.
Just watch the playoff basketball, watch a little playoff hockey, watch Texas baseball, and then – melt into my couch and then sleep for 15 hours. that's my Friday night. Yeah, Early Bird CBD, local Austin company. We love them. They love us. You'll love them too. Earlybirdcbd.com.
Sweet.